Hey guys, welcome to the Sleeper Wire Show. This is the weekly week one recap show. After all the talk of COVID and what feels like an extra longer than normal offseason, we finally have real NFL action. I'm your host, Jason, and with me on Monday night is my co-host, Max. What's going on, Max?
Not much. Excited to recap some games.
Yeah, man, it's great to get into week one. All I know is I know we're getting week one, and I know we're getting the Super Bowl. Whatever happens in the middle is going to be fun, but who knows with this season what we're going to get into. We had COVID this offseason, and right before kickoff, we had to worry about games getting canceled due to fires. It's going to be a weird season. We're just going to have to hang on. So before we get into the show, I want to do some housekeeping. SleeperWire has partnered up with Thrive Fantasy to bring you a great deal. Thrive Fantasy is the new daily sports and esports platform. Play your favorite sports with your peers. By focusing solely on top-tier athletes from each sport while streamlining the drafting process, we've created a unique DFS experience that gives the casual sports fan an opportunity to compete with and succeed at a high level. Now, what does that mean to you, sleepers? You can go to Thrive Fantasy and use promo code SLEEPERS, all caps, when you sign up today, and you'll receive an instant $20 bonus when you deposit $20 or more. So download the Thrive Fantasy in the App Store or at the Play Store, or by visiting their website at thrivefantasy.com. Sign up and hashtag prop up today. Now, I also want to let you know about the great things we have going on at SleeperWire. Go to sleeperwire.com and check out our Patreon tiers. The next 100 Patreons have a chance to win a Chris Godwin, Kenny Galladay jersey. It's going to be the winner's choice. Also, check out our writers section. These writers are hard at work turning out really great articles, including an article from Henry St. Clair just this week before the season started calling Adrian Peterson fantasy gold. Finally, I want you to head over to our shop and buy yourself some Sleeper Wire gear. So I've got to say, we've got just about everything on the shop. Hats, shirts, bags. I think I even saw a thong on there, although I think that's just for George. We have everything there you could want to be to prop Sleeper Wire for winning you a championship. So go check it out. And Max, I think with all that said, we're going to get into the news. First bit of news is Marlon Mack is out with a torn Achilles. It's a season ender for the Colts running back. So before the game, everybody was wondering how fast it was going to take Taylor to take over this starting role. Turns out it's about half a game. Max, do you see the Colts picking up anybody to replace Marlon Mack? It came out today that they were taking a look at a couple of running backs, and want to get your take on that.
Well, I'm not really sure why Freeman's still a free agent. I would expect them to take a hard look at him. I mean, he had a successful career with Atlanta. I know he has some injury issues and an injury history, but that veteran presence is going to be nice. Really bummed to see Mack go. I know the question of Taylor was, when's he going to take over? But it looks like Hines really put in the work.
Yeah, Nyheim Hines looked really good. They did say that Taylor was going to be the first and second down back. I'm sure Hines is going to be the third down back. And for Mack, you know, hopefully torn Achilles are just bad injuries for running backs. Hopefully he can get back on the field. He's a free agent at the end of the year, and hopefully he catches on with the team if the Colts don't pick him back up. But yeah, you never want to see a season end for a guy like that, especially so early. Michael Thomas suffered a high ankle injury towards the end of their game against the Bucks. He believes he'll be able to play, and he has an extra day's rest since he's playing Oakland on Monday night. This is the type of injury that really hurt Alvin Kamara last year, kind of hurt Saquon Barkley last year as well. Do you trust Michael Thomas is going to be good and ready to go Monday night against Oakland?
No, I wouldn't trust him. I would trust Emmanuel Sanders this week, Ted Ginn. But Thomas, he's so shifty, and that's what you're relying on. You're relying on catching a slant and taking it up the whole field, and that's going to be really hard with a lame ankle.
Yeah, I agree. I worry about him this week. Hopefully this is just a decoy. He had a bad game even before the injury against the Bucks. Oakland's a much softer defense, so you were, if you drafted him early, like a lot of people did, you were kind of hoping for that Oakland Monday night game to get you back on track. We'll just have to take a look and see how he progresses. Blake Jarwin, a late-round tight end darling, suffered a torn ACL and appears to be lost for the season. That really hurts for me in a whole bunch of my fantasy leagues because I punted on tight end, grabbed Blake Jarwin a whole bunch of different places. He didn't look all that great before, but man, what do you think about Blake Jarwin? Do you think there's a tight end in Dallas that can take over?
Take over right now? I don't know. I know Seattle has a few backup tight ends since they signed Olsen. The Jarwin thing, I was actually talking to a friend literally two plays before it happened about how I had Jarwin on my bench, and I was hoping he could really become something. And then he runs a curl and just falls. And I was like, well, there's a season. I believe Delanie Walker still might be a free agent. So there are people out there who can make an impact. And Dak really uses his tight ends. So they're going to need to do something there quick.
Yeah, I don't think Dalton Schultz is going to be able to get it done. But, you know, I don't know at this point what we're going to do. Delanie Walker is out there, but he's also like 97 years old. Can we really trust even somebody like Delanie Walker at this point? I think they're going to have to roll with Dalton Schultz as their tight end and just use those three great wide receivers just a little bit more. Finally in news, San Francisco has an injury twofer. George Kittle has a knee sprain and is day-to-day. And Debo Samuel suffered a setback and has now been placed on IR. However, IR this season isn't season-ending like it is most years. I believe he has to be out for three games, not necessarily all the games. So, man, with this hit on both George Kittle and Debo Samuel, is there anybody there that you like?
Well, I liked Bourne, and I really thought that he was going to get like a good uptick with Debo out because they're a similar style receiver, but he was nowhere to be seen. So right now, I like the running backs. Garoppolo's using and abusing them, and Garoppolo, in my opinion, isn't looking like a great quarterback.
Speaking of Bourne, he was wide open for a touchdown on a corner route, and Garoppolo just missed him by a mile. It was rough. So he doesn't have great chemistry with the wide receivers he has, and they refuse to get Dante Pettis on the field. I don't know if Dante Pettis slept with the coach's wife. I don't know what might have happened there, but for whatever reason, you're just not seeing him out there. This team's going to continue to struggle until Ayuk and Debo Samuel comes back. Now, George Kittle did play in the second half, but I think he was held without a touch or without a reception in the second half. So, man, and that pass to George Kittle was just another show how bad Jimmy Garoppolo was. He led him right into that hit. It's just tough for a team that went to the Super Bowl last year and was, by all accounts, focused and ready to go again this year. So we'll have to see how they react to these injuries.
You know, I will say, in defending Garoppolo, I know we're going to talk about Brady later. I think, as someone who has never been a fan of the preseason ever, week one this season showed me how important a preseason is. Because no one, well, I can't say no one, but a lot of people in new situations or different situations were not in sync at all.
And I think that's a great segue to get into our games here. We're going to get into the game recaps. I'm going to read off a brief summary. We're going to go over a couple of questions for each game. We're going to try and move through this quick so you can get all the information you need without taking all the time that you have. So getting into the week one games, we have to start at Houston at Kansas City. The game was never really close. There were two bright spots for the Texans. David Johnson looked electric in spots, having over 100 yards from scrimmage, and Will Fuller caught 8 of 10 passes for 112 yards. Kansas, on the other hand, got work from just about everyone. Watkins led the team in targets and catches. Watson, Kelsey, and Hill all got touchdowns. The big story of the night, though, was CEH with his impressive 25 attempts for 138 yards and a touchdown. But there were a couple of warning signs there for the Kansas City running back. So, Max, are you worried about Clyde Edwards-Helaire's 6 goal line carries with 0 touchdowns, and also the fact that he was basically ignored in the passing game?
Not necessarily worried. I just found it weird watching that game because you'd watch Allaire run, and he was untouched for like 5 yards. His blocking was immaculate. And then you'd watch Williams run, and he was getting contact in the backfield, but breaking it off for 2 or 3 yards. I like the rookie. I think he has a bright future ahead of him, but I think Williams has to be their goal line back because I almost feel like he's just more powerful, at least at this point. He's a stronger runner. Maybe not as elusive, not as finesse, but just a pure runner. I trust him at the end zone over Hilaire.
Yeah, I mean, six goal line carries with no result is never a good thing. It might give the team pause to give them the ball more down there. So it's something to watch for sure. I do expect him to get a lot more passing work going forward, though. This it seems like it was a fluke this week where they just didn't need him. What I can say is that Hardman got no work, and Watkins, just like last year, started out hot. It's like he does all his work in the first game, gets everybody all hot and bothered, and then just takes a break for the rest of the season until the playoffs start. What do you take away from Kansas City's wide receiver core? Is Hardman going to get more work? It seems like they forced the ball to Robinson a whole bunch. What do you take about this core?
I think last year we really thought Hardman was the number two there, and Robinson ended up taking over. I think he just has better chemistry with Robinson. There's something about him there. As far as Sammy Watkins goes, though, you can't forget he was considered to be a top-tier receiver. He just gets hurt a lot. So hopefully, if he can stay healthy, and he has this obviously beautiful rapport coming with Mahomes through the Super Bowl and now the game one, like, this might not be a mirage. This might be real.
Yeah, so I like Watkins going forward. I think this is different than last year where he caught most of his passes on bombs and got touchdowns. You know, he caught short, he caught intermediary and long passes. So I do think Watkins' game is different this time around. But with Robinson, man, I just don't see it. He dropped two sure touchdowns in this game. One was pretty good coverage, but the other one, he was just wide open. So I'd really like to see Hardman get some more work going forward, and we'll see what happens. I do have to ask, based on a pretty bad performance by the Texans offense, is there anything to be excited with the Texans next week? They play another tough matchup in playing Baltimore. So anything to be excited about?
Will Fuller didn't get hurt. That's you can be excited about that.
I think that's about it, too. I don't start, even though David Johnson looked good, I don't see him looking good against Baltimore. I don't know that I play any of those guys next week. So, on to the next game, Seattle at Atlanta. This is a game where Seattle let Atlanta stick around a little bit, but never let them get close. Russell Wilson had 4 touchdowns on 31 for 35 passing, and Seattle never got the ground game going and didn't need it. Chris Carson caught 2 touchdowns. Lockett and Metcalf had 90 yards each. Atlanta was behind all game, and it showed. Matt Ryan threw 54 times for 450 yards, and 200-plus of those were in garbage time in the fourth quarter. Matt Ryan was bolstered by 3 100-plus-yard receivers. Calvin Ridley had 2 touchdowns and 130 yards. Julio Jones had 157 yards, and the surprise was Russell Gage. Russell Gage had 12 targets, and he caught 9 of them.
No surprise at all. Love Gage.
Todd Gurley was pedestrian, but a touchdown kind of saved his day. He looked good early, kind of slowed down late. So, a couple questions here. Russell Gage, like you said, 9 for 114. Given how bad Atlanta's defense is and how often they're going to have to throw the ball, do you think they can sustain all 3 wide receivers? Given your answer earlier, I think you think Russell Gage can sustain it.
I think Gage is a safety valve. I really thought Ridley was going to be the replacement for Mohamed Sanu, and I think Gage has taken over that role. As you can see, the 9 targets, like, he doesn't produce a lot with the yard, like with the receptions, but he's going to get a lot of targets. So he's going to be a safe in he's going to have a safe floor in PPR. So I was pretty happy to see it because every league I'm in is PPR, and he was a super late round pick, and he's on the wire in some leagues still.
Yeah, I think at one point he had 4 straight targets, caught all 4. So, you know, there's definitely a spot in the game where Matt Ryan will just look his way. Because, let's just be honest, everybody's covering Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. the only downside you can say for the Falcons offense was Hayden Hurst didn't really get it going. But I think, you know, that's just kind of a COVID, no preseason, need to get some timing down with your tight end. There was one beautiful pass where he dove to catch it. I think something special could be there going forward. It just didn't happen week one. All right, we're going to move on to the Jets versus the Bills. The Bills walked all over the Jets in this game. Allen looked good at times with 312 yards, his first 300-yard-plus game of his career, and he had 14 rushes. He had a total of 3 touchdowns. He had one drastic overthrow in the end zone to a wide-open receiver. He would have had 4 total touchdowns, and that's kind of what you get with Allen. You get the good and the bad. He'll hit some amazing passes and then just miss some super easy ones. Running, of course, always adds to the floor. Both Diggs and John Brown look good. Their running game did not. Allen outgained Singletary and Moss combined. Jets, on the other hand, looked terrible. Aside from Jamison Crowder's 7 for 115 and a touchdown, there was no fantasy value there. Bell was hurt early and then put back into the game by Adam Gase. Just another great move from the best coach in the league.
He needs to be fired. Like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Dude.
So, do you think this was a step-up game for Allen, or was it just that he was playing the Jets?
I think Allen looked terrible as a quarterback. As an athlete, looked fantastic. He was great running. There were so many wide-open players that he just overthrew that it was to the point where it's like, buddy, slow down. Take a breath. You're a quarterback. Just, like, take a breath. I think Allen will improve as the season goes along, as he gets more in rhythm. It was nice to get the fantasy points, so he's going to be fantasy relevant, like obviously throughout the season. From this game, though, the person I feel the worst for is Sam Darnold. I thought this was going to be his breakout year. Then the Jets gutted his entire offense, and they signed Mims, the rookie, and they didn't even use him. Is he hurt?
Out with a hamstring injury against the Bills.
Yeah, I feel bad. That game, it was definitely going against a banged-up Bills team. Sam Darnold got screwed. Bell gets hurt because they know they're just going to try to be run-heavy. Crowder is the only real passing option. They got rid of Quincy Enunwa. I don't think anyone even knows why right now, but he's still not signed anywhere. They dumped Robbie Anderson. Adam Gase is doing Adam Gase things where he sets his quarterbacks up to fail miserably, and I do not understand how he is still in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't see how you watch what he does with the Dolphins and decide I need to get some of that, especially after, you know, a bunch of players leave the Dolphins and go on to great things. So
Bill O'Brien is terrible, and I would take Bill O'Brien over Adam Gase.
Hey, you know, don't give the Jets any ideas. That might be where they're going. So the one thing I wanted to talk about on the Bills is their run game. It flailed. Moss was a hot name in the offseason and didn't really produce. Devin Singletary didn't produce either. Like I said, Josh Allen outproduced both of them combined. Are you worried about the Bills' run game going forward, or do you think this was just a fluke?
The only thing I'm worried about is them forcing Moss in. I think Singletary is a potential all-star. We know he has that fumbling issue, but I really do think, just as a pure runner, he's fantastic. And I would love to see them actually lean on him. I think what's going to hurt the Bills is the fact that they're going to force Moss in, and it's going to hurt fantasy owners. So I don't really trust that backfield right now.
Yeah, it's a running back by committee, and neither running back looks like they've got their feet under them yet. So moving over to the Browns at the Ravens, Lamar Jackson only had 45 rushing yards. That means he had a bad day, right? Nope. 3 touchdowns on 20 for 25 throwing. Marquise Brown was his number one receiver with 101 yards on 5 receptions. Mark Andrew had a higher snap count than any other time in his career. He had 70%+ snaps, and that paid off for 2 scores. Those were the only two that were consistent in the passing game. Rushing was a problem for the Ravens in this game. Ingram and Dobbins combined for 51 yards on the ground. Dobbins had 2 touchdowns, but Ingram looked old for the first time. It got so bad that Gus Edwards had more rushing yards than either one of them. Cleveland had a 2020 start like it was an extension of their 2019 season. Baker Mayfield threw an interception on his first pass and never really got right. OBJ had 22 yards on 3 catches despite being targeted double-digit times. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt basically split the snaps with 35 and 36 snaps each. Neither impressed in the air, but each averaged 6 yards per attempt on the ground. So I think the big deal here is that there was negative game script for the Browns. They were down early. They never sniffed the end zone. And given the negative game script, are you encouraged or discouraged about Chubb's chances?
I have a lot of shares in Hunt for a reason. He's extremely talented. And this isn't a shot at Chubb, because I do think Chubb, if the game script is correct, if they are in the fight, if they are winning, Chubb will get work. The issue is, watching that game, their O-line, it was like watching Tony Romo 10 years ago. Baker Mayfield's running for his life as soon as he snaps the ball. They need to help him out, and that O-line's going to affect the run game as well. I know they are productive. 6 yards per carry is great, but if all your team can do successfully is run, the pass game can't get going, which, in effect, won't get the run game really going.
So I think if I'm a Chubb owner, despite the fact that he didn't do all that much, I'm encouraged by the fact that they were down early and he still basically was even with snaps and carries with Kareem Hunt. But short of that, and honestly, he's a buy low for me this year. But short of that, this whole team just looked bad. Baker Mayfield looked wildly inaccurate. You know, we're all going to pile on to OBJ for not having any catches. But if you go back and look at the game, he was open a lot and just got missed. Either they didn't throw it to him, or when they did throw it to him, it was very inaccurate. Baker Mayfield was supposed to be this really accurate quarterback coming out of college, and that just hasn't panned out.
Well, I mean, did you, like, Baker Mayfield, I'm not a Browns fan by any means. Don't get me wrong, like, I like football in general, but watching that, I was literally having Tony Romo flashbacks.
Yeah,
like, it was just one of those things where it's like, you have to give your quarterback a chance to throw the ball. You have to give him a shot. If a kid's running around scared, that's not good. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo looked like he was seeing ghosts.
But part of the problem there is Baker Mayfield couldn't get the ball down the field and into a receiver's hands. So if you're gonna be inaccurate down the field, then the defense isn't gonna really have to defend that, and they can just key in on the quarterback like they did. It's a little bit of a give and take. You get a little bit better at throwing, and the defense has to respect you a little more, and you don't get your ass beat quite as much.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if you call hike and then you're already getting pressured and you have to run backwards and run out of the pocket immediately, and Baker Mayfield is not a mobile quarterback. Like, can he move? Yes, he's young. Of course he can move, but he's a pocket passer. And the Browns' O-line is set up for Josh Allen, not Baker Mayfield.
Well, given how bad Ingram looked, how soon do you think Dobbins gets the lion's share of the work? And the reason I ask is, this game was more of what Lamar Jackson in the offseason said he wanted to do. He wanted to pass more, run less. And Lamar Jackson running is what helped Ingram look good last year. It took defenders away from Ingram, and it gave him wide open lanes. He didn't have as many of those, and it showed. And I think Dobbins is a better receiver out of the backfield, and he's obviously younger. I think it's, by game four, it's going to be a 60-40 Dobbins split, in my opinion. What do you think, Max?
It really depends what happens these next 2 weeks, but yeah, I could 100% see that by game four.
So one of the most heartbreaking games for a rookie this week, the Bears at the Lions. I want to quote Steve Spack from one of our other SleeperWire shows. The Lions were doing lion things. Now, to start off, Adrian Peterson looked good. He had 100 yards from scrimmage. Stafford only looked average. Despite having 297 yards, he never looked comfortable. DeAndre Swift had one touchdown in his debut, but dropped a game-winning touchdown in the end zone with only seconds left. Nokini G led to Danny Amendola leading the team in yards. One bright side was 5 receptions for 56 yards and a touchdown from Hockenson. It's a good thing to see from your young tight end who had an up-and-down year last year, mostly down. On the other side, Chicago looked bad for most of the game. Late-game heroics brought the Bears back behind a 3-touchdown performance from Mitch Trubisky. If you stopped watching in the third quarter, and nobody would have blamed you, you would have thought Foles would be starting next week.
I'm so mad about that. You have no idea. I was literally like, good, F them. Foles is going in next week. They're going to have a decent year. Like, obviously, Foles isn't a god, but they're going to have a good year. And then Matt Patricia had to go and do Lions things and make Mitch Trubisky look like a legit great quarterback. Watching that fourth quarter was so infuriating to me because I'm like, Mitch, you are not this person. Why are you playing like this?
And it's honestly, if you're a Bears or a Lions fan, the thing you can take solace in is that you kept Trubisky playing a couple more games, because there's no way after this comeback that they're going to get rid of him and bench him for Foles in the next two games.
They can't.
So the Lions may have lost the battle, but probably won the war. Miller led the team with 76 yards receiving. Robinson led the game in targets, kind of what you would have expected. Jimmy Graham, old Jimmy Graham, even caught a touchdown, his only touchdown for the year. And I'll even say David Montgomery looked good considering the injury he had, and he had a bigger than expected workload. So the question coming out of this is Tariq Cohen. He had an okay day on the ground, but when you draft Tariq Cohen, you're not looking for ground yards, you're looking for air yards. Are you panicking behind his two-target day?
I don't know if I'm necessarily panicking. Mitch Trubisky's terrible, so he may have just not looked at him. And the fact that towards the end of the game, they were going for not necessarily home run balls, but they were going for chunks every play. And your check down isn't the guy you're going to go to for chunks. They had a lot to make up quickly, and Mitch chose his receivers, which makes sense. It's just, I want to say with Foles in, I'd expect more out of Cohen. I'm not worried, but I'm not confident, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there was a stat a couple of years ago when Anthony Miller had a good game, Tariq Cohen didn't, and Anthony Miller had a good game this week. So it could just be that he was hyper-targeting his wide receivers and not looking at the running backs. I'm not panicking because it's week one, and you don't panic after week one. I am worried, though. If Tariq Cohen can't get more than two targets, especially when his team's down, it may be time to worry about Tariq Cohen. Now, especially after Swift's late game drop, do you see Peterson holding on to the heavy workload, or is he fool's gold?
I think Peterson will be leaned on pretty heavily. Matt Stafford, if he's smart, will fight Patricia every step of the way because he hasn't had a good running back in years. Swift is very talented. Watching him miss that pass was heartbreaking, but I don't think there's a better player in the NFL to learn the position behind than Adrian Peterson. So yeah. I think I'd say up until like week eight, AP will get the bulk, and then you'll see them start weaning AP out and putting more and more on Swift, because they're not, like, it's the Lions. They're not going to win it all this year, and it's a perfect time to train your young guys.
Yeah, and Peterson, I mean, for his age, he looks good. He continues to produce. You know, he likes playing in the north there, and he's going to get to play against the Vikings twice, so that's a bonus for him as well. I do think he continues, like you said, till midseason. Swift's going to slowly start taking work. Hopefully he can come back after that drop, because he literally lost them the game. That's crushing for a rookie. But
that, you know, pass was so beautiful from Matt Stafford.
It really was. It's a long season. It's a long career. Hopefully he has a short memory and comes back from it, because I think he's a really good player, and it was just unfortunate. I do want to mention Kerryon Johnson, which is probably the only time anybody's going to mention him in fantasy this year. Packers versus the Vikings. So the demise of Aaron Rodgers as a QB1 may have been exaggerated. 364 yards, four touchdowns, and Adams had a big game even for Adams. He had 17 targets. He caught 14 of them for 156 yards and two touchdowns. MVS surprised some with a 96-yard day and a touchdown. Aaron Jones had a day you'd want if you drafted him early, like most had to. 13 carries. He had goal line work, which ended in a touchdown, and he even was targeted five times with four receptions. Those receptions didn't amount to much, but he was being used in the game, and that's what you want to see. Kirk Cousins had a rough start to the game, but found Thielen a couple times late for two scores. Dalvin Cook didn't have a lot of yards, but had two touchdowns. The Vikings struggled to find a receiver not named Thielen to throw to. So, Max, for all the Lazard truthers, do you think MVS will be more productive, or is this a one-time thing?
Dude, I'm an MVS truther. I have been since he, like, first debuted. I think he's the truth. And Aaron Rodgers was hyping him up in preseason. So it's just when your star quarterback, who clearly has a chip on his shoulder and something to prove, is talking very highly of a young receiver who is potentially number two or three, I'd listen.
Yeah, some people dismiss that as QB talk about their wide receivers. But if you go back and listen from years past, it was always with Aaron Rodgers and MVS, you know, he needs to get on the same page. We're working to build chemistry. We're trying to work it out. You know, it was all negative. And this year, more than any other year, he was talking about how he was the star of camp and how he was right where he was supposed to be, most improved. I do think it's an MVS season. I don't think that means Lazard takes a big step back. He also had a touchdown in this game. I just think MVS is going to be a play for people when they thought there was only going to be two guys on this team you can count on.
Yep.
Now, I have to ask about the Vikings. Other than Adam Thielen and Dalvin Cook, was there anything of value on the Viking side? They didn't use their tight ends. You know, they didn't have a second wide receiver. Justin Jefferson didn't do much. That rookie, the highly touted rookie. Anything there, Max?
Yeah, so this was a game that I truly believe was a Kirk Cousins was scared game because they were losing quick and it was looking bad. And if you look at Kirk Cousins throughout his history with the Vikings, why Stephon Diggs is no longer with the Vikings, when Kirk Cousins, when he's like down and needs to complete passes, he hyper-focuses. He picks one guy, that guy gets everything, and that guy is Adam Thielen because Adam Thielen just gets open. Jefferson, he's never going to be a wide receiver two, at least not this season. He's going to be a boomer bust low end three, which is all you can really ask for. I did like to see some explosiveness out of Mattson, which was nice. They did use Kyle Rudolph, but he got popped bad. So that could have been why they backed off a little bit. But someone will eventually call out Kirk Cousins for hyper-focusing Adam Thielen. Then the Adam Thielen hype will go down a little bit and he'll spread the love. But until then, I wouldn't trust any other receiver on that team.
I agree. I do like the call on Madison. Even though they were behind, they ran the ball to Madison a good amount. And again, neither one of them got a whole ton of yards, but combined, they did okay. Madison's a good call. Dalvin Cook's going to continue to get touchdowns. Moving on to what could be considered one of the worst games of the week. I'm going to say the Dolphins versus the Patriots. Cam Newton did have a big day on the ground. He had 75 yards and two touchdowns. He was serviceable through the air. Almost nothing else to talk about in this game. Sony Michel had a touchdown, only had 37 yards. Edelman had 5 for 57. N'Keal Harry was unimpressive. All the Dolphins were unimpressive. Devontae Parker left the game early with a hamstring injury. Before that, he was 4 for 47. Late round darlings Gesicki and Williams underperformed their even low expectations, and despite trading for Breida and picking up Jordan Howard, Miles Gaskins led the team in carries. There's not much to talk about here other than Cam Newton. Max, do you want any of this?
As far as Miami receivers go, people can't forget the Patriots have one of the best secondaries in the entire NFL. So don't get too disheartened from Parker. The darlings could still pop. That was a very tough matchup. Cam Newton, I think, is a mirage. He missed two seasons because he runs so much, and all he did was run. He wasn't that impressive during the air. These are two teams that right now, if I don't need to play anyone from them, I'm just not going to.
So I think Cam Newton's a good start in matchups, but other than that, I'm with you. I'm not playing anybody. Moving on. The Eagles versus the Washington football team. Yes, I said that, Washington football team. So the Eagles started the game up by 17. Washington went on to score 27 straight. The question I have is how. Haskins threw for under 200 yards. They ran for under 100 yards combined. And yet they won by 10. The way they won is through their defense. 8 sacks on Carson Wentz, I believe all in the second half. Wentz started with the game with grocery baggers on the offensive line, and it shows. Goddard looked great with 101 yards and a touchdown. Rager caught a bomb. Boston Scott fizzled with Sanders out. Antonio Gibson was touted as a good option this offseason by Ron Rivera, but Peyton Barber out-touched him and got 2 touchdowns. Did you see anything from Gibson where you think he can get more production?
No, nothing. I don't want to trust any Redskin running back. I've been conditioned to not. Washington football team. I don't want to trust any of their running backs. I've been conditioned for years not to trust any of their running backs. Ron Rivera also has a history of being weird with his running backs. So I'm just not touching that backfield at all. As far as the Eagles go, their O-line was decimated, and there was an injury during the game. And they insisted on not using Greg Ward and only using their rookies. They barely targeted Ward at all, and they're just trying to... I think the Eagles came into this game thinking it was a guaranteed win, and that was a huge mistake.
Yeah, I think I read that Miles Sanders could have gone, and they were just being overly careful with him, and I think they were looking past this week, and it was a big mistake. DeSean Jackson got 7 targets, only caught 2 of them. There wasn't a whole lot on this team to look forward to. I think only Goddard and Ertz are the guys you can play on this team. Wentz, maybe, until Sanders comes back. Is there anything else here, Max, that you might like?
Alshon will be in next week, so look for maybe Rager to be productive when he's not pulling the number one coverage. They really need to get Greg Ward back involved. That's the only thing I'd like, is to get their only guy who's consistent for them last year, to get him the ball again.
Yeah, and I don't think you can trust him in fantasy until you see it again, because it didn't look like they trusted him this week. So, all right, the Raiders versus the Panthers. This game, I thought it was going to be a Raiders blowout, but it was a back-and-forth game from the beginning. There were 8 total lead changes in this game. The Panthers with Teddy Bridgewater looked better than most thought. McCaffrey did McCaffrey things, and Robbie Anderson surprised with 100-plus yards and a touchdown. The big story from the Raiders was Josh Jacobs, who had 93 yards on the ground and 3 touchdowns. He also had 4 receptions for 46 yards, something he didn't get much of last year. Derek Carr was the definition of average, but didn't lose them the game. Ruggs had 55 yards in his debut, and Waller had a good PPR day with 6 catches and 55 yards. So, Robbie Anderson is a name who everybody thought in New York could be decent. Can you trust Robbie Anderson going forward with Teddy Bridgewater?
I think he's the number one. I think he would have been the number one with the Jets. I thought it was very unfair of the Jets to take that weapon away from Sam Darnold. And Teddy Bridgewater is a good quarterback, and he's going to abuse Robbie Anderson's speed. So, yes, I 100% trust Robbie Anderson going forward.
Now, I can't say he's the number one. DJ Moore had a bad game or an average game, but I think he's still the clear-cut number one. I just don't think that this matchup lended itself
when
to
I say number
DJ
one,
Moore.
I view it as in fantasy as to who I think. It's kind of like bad analogy, but like Julio Jones versus Ridley. It's like Ridley might get more targets. So in my eyes, fantasy PPR, I want Ridley. But obviously, Julio Jones is better.
Okay. So I do want to talk about Jacob's performance this week. A lot of people had him high in their rankings. Do you think that was a product of the defense they played? Last year, I think the Panthers were worse against the run. They were even worse against pass-catching running backs. He has a much tougher mashup against the Saints next week, so I'm kind of wondering, is Jacobs as good as he looked, or do we think he's going to come back down to earth?
He's as good as he looked. We knew last year that he was a stud, and the Raiders have the Raiders have a history of not trusting their running back, and it looks like they're finally trusting their running back.
And I do like that they threw the ball to him. He only had 4 receptions, but that's, I think, tied for the most he had all of last year. So it looks like he's at least going to get partially involved. I'd like to see a little bit of less of Booker. But for me, I really like Jacobs this week. He's going to fade back a little bit against the Saints, which is a much tougher defense. But going forward, he's a solid to probably top 5 running back start going forward. All right, so the Colts at Jacksonville. The Jags were supposed to be tanking, but don't tell that to Gardner Minshew, who went 19 for 20 with 3 touchdowns. None of his wide receivers really stood out, but they all looked good. Minshew completed passes to 10 different targets. James Robinson looked okay in spots, but didn't really flash. The Colts lost Marlon Mack, which we talked about at the start of the show. Jonathan Taylor didn't have a great game on the ground, but made up for it in the air, catching all 6 passes for 67 yards. Paris Campbell looked good with 71 yards. Rivers threw for a lot of yards, but also threw 2 picks, which is a very Philip Rivers thing. The Jags were low-key talked about as fantasy starts based on negative game strip. Minshew scored big, but Chark, Chenault, and Cole only had good days based on their touchdowns. Is there someone here you're going to be comfortable starting? I know Chark is a must start based on last year and catching a touchdown this year. Chenault, Cole, is there anybody else there you're comfortable starting on the Jacksonville Jaguars?
I like Cole personally. He'd be a sneaky flex play depending on matchup. I want to see week 2 with Minshew. I really hope this isn't like an aberration. I hope this is the truth because I like the kid's swag, and I would love for a team that's supposed to be tanking for a quarterback to find their franchise quarterback in a backup. That would be such a great story. But I did like Cole. I like the way he ran his routes. He looked good out there. And like I said, this is going to be – I need to see Minshew week 2 to gauge how I'm going to view on him the rest of the season. This could have been a sloppy Colts secondary with no preseason. We're not really sure. So once things start getting ironed out a little bit more, we'll know more.
Okay, so not even for fantasy, but if you're the Colts and you're playing against the Jags who are tanking, are you panicking now that you lost?
Again, I would say no. It's Gardner Minshew played a beautiful game. And that's the late thing. Like this week specifically, this week 1 is different than every week 1 we've ever seen. Where we've watched superstars not play well this week because there was no preseason. And like I said, it made me realize how important that is. The Colts aren't a great team. Phillip Rivers is 147 years old. They're going to have an okay season. They'll be fine. People are saying the Jags are going to tank. Clearly, Jacksonville does not want to tank. So
I think the team wants to tank, but I don't think the players got that memo.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. If you're a player, you're here to win. And just because your organization would like to draft a quarterback, guess what? If you have the talent, you have the talent. You're going to win.
I agree. I'm actually looking forward to seeing how the Jags pull out each week. Just I want to see them give it to that GM and the owner and just be like, you know, we're good enough to win, you know, 6 games. You guys aren't getting the first pick. So we're going to go to the Chargers at the Bengals. And if the Lions do Lion things, then this is the Bengals doing the Bengal things. Last second botched field goal to tie dooms Joe Burrow's debut. The rookie QB didn't look great, but against a good defense, he put the team in position to tie the game late. Joe Mixon disappointed with only 69 yards on 19 carries. AJ Green led the team with 5 for 51. And while not the numbers you were hoping for, it's a good sign that he's starting the season healthy. The Chargers struggled on offense, particularly Austin Eckler. He had 19 carries, but again, it's like Tariq Cohen. You're not looking for the carries. You're looking for the pass. And in the passing game, he suffered. Tyrod Taylor only targeted the running back position 1 time for 3 yards, a marked difference from how Phillip Rivers ran the offense last year. Hunter Henry led the team for 73 yards on 5 receptions, and Josh Kelly is the clear number 2 behind Austin Eckler, getting all the goal line work. Are you panicking on the way they're using Austin Eckler week 1?
No. Tyrod Taylor, like every quarterback has a different safety valve. Tyrod's has historically been tight ends. So Hunter getting a lot of work doesn't surprise me. As far as Austin Eckler goes, the Chargers organization made a clear defining movement towards having Eckler be their like focus when they got rid of Melvin Gordon and decided not to like re-sign him or anything. And I think Tyrod Taylor and the coaches will work Eckler in. He's too talented to not become a prime focus.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him losing his spot or anything like that. But what I am worried about is the fact that they don't throw it to the running back, or they haven't in this first week. And like you said, Phillip Rivers' safety valve was running backs. Tyrod Taylor's safety valve's tight end. So if Eckler doesn't catch the ball, he's a good but not great running back who doesn't get to show what he does best.
I do think that when Hunter Henry starts getting exposed as being an elite tight end, he's not Kittle where he has that burner speed and that agility. People will cover Henry, and he'll be forced to use Eckler. So Eckler isn't going to be the number one we all hope for, but he'll be a high-end two with one potential.
That's fair enough. And now I have to roll into Joe Mixon. Same kind of thing with him. Are you panicking? They did give him the ball a lot. He just didn't make a ton out of it. Is that just going up against a good defense? Them focusing on Joe Mixon because they didn't have to worry about Burrow as a rookie? What do you think it was with Joe Mixon this week?
I think you pick your superstar and you attack him, and I think that's exactly what happened. They know Mixon is currently the best player on that team because Burrow is unproven. No one knows what A.J. Green's going to do, and they just went after Mixon. They were ready for the run every time, and it was encouraging to see that they just kept going back to Mixon. They weren't afraid to give him the ball again and again and again. So going forward, like, I'm still comfortable with that. Burrow looks like a quarterback who will develop into something good. So once the passing game opens up, obviously those running lanes will open up. So I'm really not worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw it last year. It took Joe Mixon a little while to get going. It took the Bengals a little while to understand how to use him, and it's a brand new quarterback. I think Burrow will get more comfortable throwing the ball to Mixon, and I think he'll be okay going forward. Bucks at the Saints. Man, this game broke my heart as a Bucks fan. Tom Brady started out hot, scoring a touchdown on their first drive and failed to score again before halftime. He salvaged an okay fantasy day with three total touchdowns, and the Bucks got a good but not great performance from Chris Godwin with 79 yards. Mike Evans basically was saved on his fantasy day with one catch for a touchdown really late in the game. O.J. Howard out-targeted, out-received, and outscored Rob Gronkowski. And that's something going forward I think we're going to see. Gronkowski was a pretty good blocker, but a really bad receiver. He just looked old out there. Now, Alvin Kamara looked average as a runner with only 1.3 yards per carry, but he scored twice and had 52 receiving yards. Drew Brees had a pedestrian day, and that was on the back of Michael Thomas never being open. Thomas had three receptions for 17 yards, and I believe that's his lowest yard total of his career. Jared Cook showed he could be a top 10 tight end option with five receptions for 80 yards. He got behind the defense late and basically gave them a three-score lead. Getting the ball down there, they kicked a field goal, got a three-score lead. So Jared Cook looked pretty good. So as for the Bucks, the big question is going to be, can Brady get better in this offense? And also, do you think Scotty Miller is a sneaky pickup?
Scotty Miller fits that Edelman role perfectly, that kid who's just going to get open, will take the hit, doesn't care. And that's what I think Brady felt comfortable with, was that guy, like, they just looked in sync. This was the game that, like, to me, I was like, oh my God, preseason is so important. Because Mike Evans was running routes short. And you could just see when Brady's, like, looking at him, like, you could see, like, the panic in Brady's eyes as he's throwing it because he's watching his receivers stop when they're supposed to keep going because they're not in sync yet. And I have a few, like, I live in New England, so I had a few friends freaking out, being like, oh, Brady sucks. And I'm like, are we watching the same game? Because I'm watching receivers run the wrong routes or run routes short.
So here's, as a Bucks fan, I want to speak a little bit more on this. I'm not 100% sure Evans ran the wrong route or if Brady saw it incorrectly because the defense went deep with Evans and Evans came up short. Now, what Evans saw in that play was a linebacker blitz. So what Evans, it was a wide receiver option where the wide receiver had a chance to go out and cut back when he saw the linebackers blitzing or just keep going deep. So when he saw that there was defense deep and linebackers blitzing, he stopped like he should have. And Brady's the one who threw it too far and didn't read it correctly. I'm not saying that's something that's on Brady because that's all we saw last year out of Bruce Arians' offense and what we hear from guys like Carson Palmer after his first year there is that there's a lot of options in this offense based on what the wide receiver reads, and the quarterback and the wide receiver have to be in sync, but really the quarterback has to be able to read that play, and that was a mistake by Brady. And I'm not saying he's not going to get better over this year, because I think he does. And like you said, without having preseason, with having a short camp, those are the things like that though that preseason gives you that he didn't get. So I think in a couple games he'll have it down. But we got to remember that Brady played with the same head coach for 20 years, and you know, after a while you can see exactly what the play is supposed to be on the field before the defense even gets into their positions, because you've got that familiarity with the coach and familiarity with the other players, and Brady doesn't have that right now. But to say that that was Evans cutting off the route, he did, but it was because what Evans saw in that offense or in that defense, he did basically exactly what he was supposed to do.
I think the options that Bruce Arians run needs to stop. Because Brady is the quarterback that he would throw the ball before the receiver looked, and as soon as the receiver turned his head, the ball was in his hands. And that's the style he plays, which I agree, like 20 years with Belichick, that's how it worked. You know, you always know where the guy's going to be, but that's what Brady's looking for. That's what he needs. He doesn't want your receivers making the reads. He wants to make the reads because he's Tom motherfucking Brady. So it's just one of those things where it's like, Mike Evans, you say he made the right read, but in Brady's eyes, Brady wanted him deep.
Yeah, okay, but he was running deep into two defenders.
It's Tom Brady. I've seen, and like I said, I'm not a Patriots fan. I'm a Seahawks fan. For anyone who's a fan of the show, and they know that, Tom Brady has made some throws that I've seen that I just don't understand how they've connected. And Mike Evans is one of the top three one of the top three wide receivers in the NFL. So if your legendary quarterback is telling the legendary talent of Mike Evans to go deep, just fucking go deep. Sorry for swearing. It's going to be some beeps going on in there.
All right, so on the Saints' side, what would you attribute their offensive struggles to? Is it Breeze age, taking their foot off the gas when they got up? Does Tampa actually have an okay defense? I think Tampa's defense played pretty well, especially Sean Murphy Bunting basically covered Michael Thomas, shadowed him all game, and had a pretty decent game. So was it Tampa's defense okay? Was it Breeze just being old? What do we think happened to the Saints offense?
I think Breeze hyper-focused. Tampa's defense is good. Breeze hyper-focused on Thomas, who was shut down. It took him too long to turn his attention to Emmanuel Sanders, who's another amazing receiver. And I know Alvin Kamara just signed this monster contract. I think they trust Latavius Murray to run more. It just looked like in running situations, they gave Latavius the ball.
Yeah, so I agree. Latavius Murray looked pretty good when he got his chance. They are going to involve him, and they involved him a little bit more than I thought they would. But really, the value there was in the passing game to the running backs, and that's where Kamara shined. So,
that's where you expect Kamara to shine. That's his thing.
All right, so we're going to get off the saddest game of the week for me, and we're going to move to the Cardinals at San Francisco. The Cardinals played San Francisco close twice last year, so it shouldn't be a surprise to see them give the 49ers a run for their money. However, the big surprise was the Cardinals holding on to the win this year, especially in a game where Murray had to throw 40 times. He had one passing TD and one called back by inches to DeAndre Hopkins. He also had 91 yards on the ground and another touchdown on the ground. So reports of DeAndre Hopkins' demise was greatly exaggerated as well. 16 targets for 14 receptions and 151 yards. DeAndre Hopkins keeps reminding us all that it doesn't matter who his quarterback is. He's going to get targeted. He's going to catch the ball. He's going to get a bunch of yards. Kenyon Drake had a good day with 60 yards on the ground and a touchdown. On the 49ers side, Jimmy G had a mix of success today. When he was able to throw short to the running back and let the running back do the work, he had great success. However, when he had to pass wide receivers, he missed a couple really late that made the difference in the game. He also threw, like we said earlier, threw a pass to Kittle that damn near took his knee out. Mostert was the clear fantasy stud on the San Francisco side with 15 carries for 56 yards and 4 receptions for 95 yards and a touchdown. How worried are you about the receiving options in San Francisco, and will they be fine when Deebo Samuels and Ayuk return? Or is this just the way Jimmy Garoppolo is going to look?
If it's not Deebo Samuels, I don't want any part of their receiving options besides Kittle. Jimmy G looks scared. He played the game scared. He just looks scared. That's the only way to describe it. He looked like Baker Mayfield, except he still had blocks happening for him.
Yeah, I've got to say, you know, he's on a much better team. He had a lot of time. He just looked bad. I mentioned earlier, Kendrick Bourne was wide open for a touchdown late in that game. Just missed him badly. I think he's going to be the impediment to them getting to where they want to be, and that's, to me, that's sad, because I really do like this team. I think John Lynch, who was a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, I have to throw that out there, has been a fantastic GM after I made fun of them for signing him with no experience. So I'm pretty disappointed in the way the 49ers came out here, and pretty excited for the Cardinals, who just a couple of years ago were one of the worst teams I think I've ever watched play the game. The one thing I do want to ask about the Cardinals is if we think there's going to be another fantasy play at wide receiver on the Cardinals. According to the Next Gen Stats, Hopkins was targeted on 40% of his routes and was 51.1% of his team's air yards. That doesn't leave a lot for anybody else. Do you think there's anybody else there that has a chance?
Drake. That's about it.
Yeah, I do like Christian Kirk, but for some reason, you know, and I'll have to go back and deep watch the game and check to see if Kirk was open and they were just forcing it to Hopkins, because why wouldn't you? But, you know, coming into the season, I like Christian Kirk, but he just didn't get anything done this week. So, you know, until they show me something, I think it's just going to be Hopkins or bust. And finally, we're going to talk about Dallas at the Rams. Dak Prescott had a rough night. He did have 266 yards and a touchdown, but Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey gave him fits. Prescott nearly had a rushing touchdown, but was down just ahead of the goal line. Amari Cooper had a good PPR game with 10 receptions for 81 yards. Gallup and CeeDee Lamb had 50 and 59 yards, respectively. Where the Cowboys shined, of course, was the running game. Zeke had 22 carries, 96 yards, and a touchdown to go along with one touchdown through the air. However, if you were looking for standalone value from Tony Pollard, you were disappointed with his 2 carries and 2 receptions. Jared Goff was also disappointing. He had 275 yards and no touchdowns. Piling on the disappointment was any Rams wide receiver not named Robert Woods. Robert Woods had 105 yards on 6 receptions, and no other receiver broke 50 yards. Malcolm Brown was the best of the Rams in the opener, 79 yards on 18 carries and 2 touchdowns. He's clearly the number one, despite the draft capital in Akers and Henderson. So, with the Rams, Gerald Everett was hurt in the second half. If he misses significant time, do you think that bumps up Tyler Higbee for you?
Yes, 100%. And I have to throw this out there, too. Jared Goff missed Cooper Kupp so many times that I wanted to go to L.A. and throw the ball to Cooper Kupp. There was like a wide open touchdown to Cooper Kupp that Jared Goff just didn't throw.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's, we've talked about that a lot. There's been wide open passes missed by some of these middle of the road quarterbacks, just guys not being able to get to their second and third reads. And maybe some of that is just missing action in the preseason. And maybe some of that's just bad quarterback play. And maybe it's not going to correct itself throughout the season. One thing I did want to talk about is everybody was pretty quick to anoint Dak as a top five receiver, or everybody was quick to anoint Dak as a top five quarterback, especially after they drafted CeeDee Lamb. Do you think we were too hasty in that, or do you think he just ran up against a good defense that played him well?
I think the Rams have potentially, with the key pieces they have, one of the best defenses in the NFL, and I think, like, even Jared Goff, who I think isn't as good as Dak, could have an amazing season with that receiving core and that running back game.
Yeah, you know, one thing I'll say is his average depth of target was pretty low, but it was right where it was last year. I think around 6.1 is average depth of target. That's kind of tough if you're looking for a big game from your quarterback. It'd be nice to see if you could throw down the field to some of his guys. Like, you know, when he throws it over the top to Cooper or even Gallup, good things happen, but it seems like a lot of the throws were close to the line of scrimmage. And part of that's just because the offensive line didn't protect him very much. And so that's what happens when you run up against a good defensive line like that. Sometimes you don't get enough time to throw the ball and throw the ball deep, which is something that Dak does well. All right, that's going to wrap it up for our game recaps. We are recording this on Monday night, so we're not going to be able to cover the two Monday night games. You have to go watch those for yourself, which is something Max and I are going to do. If you want to follow me, I'm at DFTGJason, and on the Sleeper Wire, I'm DFTGDrMill. And as always, you can go to sleeperwire.com to find all of our other shows, and at Sleeper Wire Show on Twitter to reach out to us and get some interaction. So with that, Max, why don't you say goodnight?
Good night, folks. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks, guys.